Thank you for organizing this symposium and for the invitation. Today's talk will be a two-part teaser because I won't have time to get into the details of the modeling that I'll be presenting. The two parts will be dealing with the same problem, and that is linking surface temperature to evaporation rates from porous surfaces, soil. The first part will deal with the work of Milad, and that is looking at the dynamics of surface temperature as the soil dries. And the second part will talk about interactions of turbulent eddies with the evaporating surface and looking at temperature fluctuations at a much shorter time scales than the first one. And that's the work of Erfan. The gradual drying of soil surfaces is marked by non-linear relationships between the surface water content and the evaporative flux. By this I mean that if you drop the water content by half, you may not reduce the evaporative flux by half. In fact, in many cases, you won't even change it that much. That's why we call it the constant rate evaporation. And this has some ramifications on the dynamics of the surface temperature and the energy partitioning over these surfaces. Now, these are not new insights. This has been used in many remote sensing methods, the one and two source methods, the spatially distributed algorithm like the Siebel, or the tree temperature method of Q et al. They all use surface temperature to deduce, typically in hindcasting, the evolution of the sensible heat flux or latent heat flux. So these are some examples from these papers of the authors of these methods. However, the gap and maybe the recalcitrant problem here is that there is no mechanistic models in our operation that link directly, that is mechanistically, the evolution of surface temperature with evaporation. So this is, I think, is a gap that we'd like to address. The second gap is something that happens at a much shorter time scale, and that is the interactions of turbulence with the evaporating surfaces that is not exploited enough. I mean, there is, of course, the some of the surface renewal algorithms that are used, but the exploitation of a short time scales, very much like we do in the eddy covariance, doesn't happen or is not widely used in the thermal applications of this remote sensing, simply because the time scales for the real remote sensing platforms is too short. But for us, for anybody who wants to look at plant canopies or evaporating surface, this is a very useful time scale, and I'll show what why is that. So I said I have two parts, so these are the two parts. They're really somewhat unrelated, but they both deal with evaporation and surface temperature. The first part is solving the evaporation problem coupled with the temperature of the surface. And to do that, we had to go down to the pore scale, and that's what we've been doing in the last few years, looking at the evaporation as a pore scale phenomena. So I'll show you a closed form solution that we were able to derive, and I will take this closed form solution with the evolution of the surface temperature to predict energy partitioning, that is the Boyne ratio or the alpha parameter of the Priestley-Taylor that is commonly used or used heavily in many algorithms. And the second part, I'll move to the turbulence, and we'll develop a model, a forward model, in which we link the turbulent characteristics, the momentum characteristic, with the thermal signatures, and then take this model and invert it, use measurements to deduce traits of the surface and also reflect a bit on the turbulence itself. So let's start with the first part, looking at energy partitioning over, say, drying surface. The model that we're using, as I said, is the pore scale model, and the idea is that to capture the non-linearities of drying surfaces or evaporation from porous surfaces, we do have to consider diffusion from individual pores. And as the surface dries, the remaining pores become increasingly spaced from each other, And that, of course, has some ramifications on the energy partitioning of the surface that I alluded to. So we capture this phenomena by setting boundary conditions to the evaporation process here, linking the solving an energy balance over the surface, and then linking the fluxes, the evaporative flux, as a boundary condition with a set of thermal fluxes involving exchange with the air, a soil heat flux, as well as a lateral flux from the evaporating pore to the dry soil around it. This is, of course, a conceptual picture. But in doing so, we can obtain an analytical solution for the thermal field around each pores, then average it over the surface and derive what the surface surface temperature evolution would be. Because I said it's a teaser, then I'll just show you the equation for a few seconds before it disappears, just to show that it's actually been solved. It's gone. So so the nice thing about this is that we were able to derive it analytically, and this is due to the how smart Milad is, not so much as me. We conducted some experiments in the lab to test this model. So this is a sandbox. So we can put it on a balance, radiate it with shortwave radiation or not, put it in a wind tunnel and apply to it different wind speeds. And I'm showing you here just some set of results from a new paper that came out in which we compare the behavior with and without shortwave radiation. The intensity here was, the irradiance here was about 280 watts per square meter generated by those two xenon lamps. What you can see is that the evaporation rate from the surface for the same condition except with the shortwave radiation is higher, as expected. The surface temperature remains relatively constant throughout the drying of the surface until the end when the evaporation rate drops to stage two, where we have a sharp increase in the surface temperature. The surface temperature of the evaporating surface temperature is higher than the air temperature by a couple of degrees, in this case by about 2-3 degrees, whereas when we don't have shortwave radiation, the surface temperature is cooler than the air by about the same, by about 2 degrees also. The soil heat flux also is predicted here, showing that in the absence of shortwave radiation, the soil heat flux points to the surface, as you'd expect, whereas in the presence of heat flux, the soil, in the presence of shortwave radiation, the heat flux point into the soil, and there is a tremendous rearrangement of these fluxes as the soil, as the evaporation transition to stage two evaporation. The in the absence of shortwave radiation, the soil heat flux turns to zero, but in other words, the soil temperature and the air temperature equate, whereas in the presence of shortwave radiation, we have a rapid increase in surface temperature. We can take this model and also predict quantities such as the Bowen ratio or the alpha of Priestley-Taylor. We put our hands on every possible, more actually, we collected every possible data set we could put our hands on, probably it's not all of them. The original data of Priestley and Taylor are the square, and then they have a bunch of other data showing the relationships between this Bowen ratio and the air temperature, simply because the surface temperature is very difficult and rarely measured, especially over oceans and stuff like that. And this is where much of the data came from in the Priestley Taylor paper. But you can see that the Bowen ratio is not constant with air temperature, and it's not constant with shortwave radiation. It's clear. The data of Priestley-Taylor, or the best fit to this data set, including the Priestley-Taylor data, give us an alpha coefficient of the order of 1.2, slightly lower than the 1.26 that Priestley-Taylor fitted to their original, in their original paper. We can take now this mechanistic model and mechanistically generate parameters for correcting this alpha coefficient for wind speed, for solar radiation, and air temperature. So we have a linear function like this. It has in it these ingredients that were generated in a forward manner using the model. And we can basically correct the alpha coefficient that is used, as I said, in many algorithms for the local climatic conditions. Of course, I mean, this is a huge stretch, taking a pore scale model and applying it to watersheds or continents, of course, but there's really not much of physics, even now, between what you do at the smallest scale and what happened at a much larger scale. There's really, other than introducing heterogeneity and things of that nature, there's not much happening in between these two scales. That brings me to the second part of my talk, and that is the role of turbulence on imparting a thermal signature on evaporating surface. The idea is basically to take turbulence and represent the turbulent eddies, or represent turbulence as discrete eddies or parcels of air that come, interact with the surface and are ejected back to the core turbulence flow. The eddies come at different sizes and different characteristics. We can represent them from an exchange point of view just by the duration in which they interact with the surface and the boundary layer they form between the surface and the eddy. So during the residence time over the surface, there'll be a temperature or vapor exchange between the surface and the eddy, and then the eddy is ejected back, and that mass, if you wish, if you look at evaporation, that mass now is taken back to an atmospheric transport processes. To look at the thermal signature, we calculate an instantaneous surface temperature at the point. So we fix a point, and that point is visited by a population of eddies, and I'll say a few words about these populations in a minute. The temperature fluctuates depending on the size of the local viscous sublayer thickness, and you'll get a fluctuation of temperatures of this nature. This is what we measure, actually. And we characterize them by the instantaneous fluctuation in the temperature as well as the duration of that perturbation. So we have two parameters here in this effect. And just a word about this viscous sublayer thickness, just to put it in a broader context. This is the region in which momentum is across which momentum is transferred to the surface, and most of the exchange processes by diffusion occur across it. It has a thickness of a few millimeters, depending on the wind speed. And under turbulent conditions, you can characterize the turbulence by this eddy residence time, or eddy size, if you wish. And the characteristic parameter here would be this alpha parameter. And you'll have a high-intensity turbulence with a very short duration and a longer lingering eddies with a longer duration, and they vary with this shape parameter alpha. So the distribution here is a gamma distribution. There is another parameter called the rate parameter, beta, and that will be a parameter related to surface properties. Don't trouble yourself if you cannot follow the origin of this parameter, but just remember that this characteristics of this turbulence are characterized by these two parameters primarily. So the thickness of the boundary layer will be thinner under under turbulent conditions relative to laminar conditions for the same wind speed as you would expect. But now these are linked to the distribution of the eddy populations that interact with the surface. So we conducted some experiments to test some of these notions that were laid out with this model. So we have a homemade wind tunnel where we can prescribe the turbulence field above an evaporating surface. I'm showing here a wavy surface, but don't mind that, it's just a surface. We look at the surface with an infrared imager. This is a FLIR imager, but it's really not that essential for the application. The thermal field is actually overwhelming the same issue of too much data, and we actually take data from selected points over the surface. The Taylor hypothesis is quite nice. You can actually see that wherever you take the thermal images or the thermal information, it's you get basically the same results. So I'll show you some results of a test of this concept with an evaporating sand column in which we can change the water table depth. And the idea with changing the water table depth is to fix air water content at the surface. The water content value will be dependent on the hydrostatic profile, that is the depth of the water table, and I'll show you that we can verify that it's true. So I can put the water table at the surface, have a fully saturated surface. I can put it at some depth below the surface and change the water content and look at the impact of that resulting water content that is now constant. The surface is not drying anymore because I constantly supply water to the system if needed. And I look at the temperature fluctuations. As you will see here, for a wet surface, that is the, when the water table is at the surface, you see fluctuation of temperature that have a typical duration that is longer than those under drier conditions in the soil. And in fact, when you collapse this wiggly information using the analysis that I showed earlier, you'll find a distribution, a probability density for the what we call now the thermal eddies. These are now the signatures of the turbulence on the on the evaporating surface. And you'll see that they'll have different characteristics, different shapes, depending on the water content at the surface. But not surprising, the shape parameter for is constant for all of them. The parameter that varies is the beta, the rate parameter, that is dependent on the soil thermal and water content and other properties of the surface. So with this, we want to say that we can estimate consistently the structure of the temperature fluctuations induced by a fixed turbulent regime. We can also verify that the water content that I assumed is actually indeed what we measured. So we took samples from the sand surface to see that the hydrostatic profile indeed works. We also verify that the average evaporation rate from the surface, not the fluctuation, but the average, is indeed recaptured because we weigh the mass loss from this column. One of the results that kind of surprised me how well it worked is this beta parameter that we can express in a closed form as a function of the water content, the thermal diffusivity of the surface, and characteristics of these temperature fluctuations. So this will be the fitted data to the distribution that we measured, and the line here will be the model predictions for the same input parameter. So it works really, really surprisingly well. I'm not sure if it's not an error. It just works too good. We also took some data from Gabi Katul, who measured fluctuations of wind speed and temperature over grass surfaces, and we can collapse it to the same representation in terms of residence time. Again, the alpha parameter that really is the characteristic of the turbulence is the same, but the rate parameter is different for these two attributes, the wind speed fluctuation and temperature fluctuations. So to summarize, because I can see already my time is up, we've showed a model that linked the evolution of surface temperature with the drying of a surface. Analytically, it is based on pore-scale representation of evaporation from surfaces, so it has in it all the ingredients we need for the non-linearities, and we were able to extend it with some mind-boggling upscaling, which is really not really upscaling, to predict Priestley-Taylor coefficient or Bowen ratio over larger surfaces. We are presently testing elements of this model by looking at evaporation from individual pores. What you see here are 200 micron radius pores and two different wind speeds. So we want to see that the temperature field that we're predicting is actually, we can measure it. For the turbulence interactions, we were able to link theoretically the impact of a turbulent field on evaporation and on the thermal, on the structure of the temperature fluctuations over the surface, and extract from the thermal measurement parameters that are useful to deduce something about the turbulence, for example, this alpha parameter. We think that a single infrared measurement over a surface or towards a canopy, if it's rapid enough, it will be sufficient to deduce this information, very much like the eddy covariance is doing. That's my hope at the end. But we need a rapid infrared measurement. So you can imagine you can look at the tree from different locations and actually deduce something about the transpiration flux. This is particularly useful for thin and low heat capacity surfaces But it's not only limited to that, because in the sand we have ways to correct for the surface heat capacity and thermal depth that varies with the turbulence regime. So with this, I'd like to thank the funding agencies, the Swiss National Foundation and the German Research Foundation, and thank you for your attention. Thank you.